It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 19th day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go, for instance, if you would like to be part of the madcap multimedia real-time zany, wacky extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password. It's free. It's easy. And jump right in where you will be greeted at the moment by Squeaky and BT Blom and Midweek Utility Chat Room Moderator Steve from Georgistan. Like a doctor, like a lot of doctors, Sparky takes Wednesdays off. You'll be greeted by even more than that. Why, there's Anatole even now popping by. So we always love new faces in the chat room, as long as they aren't, you know, right-wing asshats. Those people get the bums rush pretty quickly, because Steve is quick with the lightsaber. He does not suffer fools gladly. There's Hoghead arriving. Good evening, Hoghead. We are at the midway point of this third week of July. And, this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. You know that. Let's get that part out of the way. Pulled up. We're trying to raise $275 a night for the rest of July, so that what was expended in the trip to D.C. On behalf of on behalf of Appalachian Health won't completely devastate the budget. So we're trying to raise $275 a night. We pulled up short by about $200 last night, but the overnight crew. The overnight crew was, the subscription crew was most helpful. And thank you very kindly, one and all. They were most helpful, and consequently, we do not have $475 to raise this evening. No, we have $380 to raise this evening. See, that's where subscriptions come in oh so handy. If you'd like to, and we're one of these days, we'll get 400 people to just say, hey, $10 a month, I'm in. But we're not there yet. But if you would like to be one of those folks, 400, fantastic 400, well, right now we're just looking for the happy 100. Well, you just check that little box there under the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. And that's how easy it is. And so on the same date every month, the same amount will be kicked over here. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. If you'd just like to maybe knock down part of that $380 we'll try to raise tonight, you know, 10, 15, 20, 10 at 38, 38 at 10, 1 at 380, 2 at 190, 4 at 95, 8 at 4750, and from there, you know, the ciphering becomes difficult, and I don't handle it so well. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Let me know. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he'll leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, because when there's no mail in the box, man, he's, you know, that ungoliant that lives in there just, you know, chews the gloves right off his hands. But if there's going to be mail, he can leave, and then he won't have to take anything with him but say, an industrial push broom handle in case he runs into the grand exalted cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan, who also picked their mail up at the same UPS store because, well, after all, you know, it's just business. Right? Yeah. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and like I said, we've reached midweek. And being as how it's midweek, that means it's Wednesday. And being as how it's Wednesday, that means it's downhill to Friday. Hump day. But ever so much more than that, brethren and sistren, absolutely. That means it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Oh, hallelujah, glory, it is. It is, brethren and sistren, it is. And I have to tell you, at the special request of the little old blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, so there's a backstory to this. While I was gone to Washington, D.C., you know, I've posted some pictures and stuff, and the rusty old smoker has gone just about as far as it can go, as far as being particularly useful for doing ribs, shoulders, that kind of thing. But while I was gone to Washington, D.C., sister wife Agnes, she's going to kick my ass for that. Sister wife Agnes went on a bargain hunt because sister wife Agnes can find her some bargains. And she didn't tell me about it until I got back. And it was a complete surprise to me. But she found, new, in the box, never been opened, all the plastic wrap and styrofoam and everything all around it. She found one of those char griller acorn cookers for sale nearby, and she found it. They sell for about $290, and she reached into her pin money and got it for less than half of that, and surprised me with it over the weekend. I put it together. I only made a couple of mistakes. They're not unbearable mistakes. But I seasoned it and got it. And so the little old blue-haired ladies asked me, would I put a few, because we hadn't had any this summer, asked me, would I put a few pork shoulders on? And I did. And, oh, brethren and sister, and I tell you what, pork shoulders and roasting ears of corn, some of that wonderful, wonderful spicy hot slaw that I make. And the congregation was very, very, very happy. And the little old blue-haired ladies were kind of happy to sort of have the week off there in the Fellowship Hall kitchen. And they dove into the pulled pork with a will, I'm telling you. All hickory smoky and wonderful. Just wonderful. Moist and tender. Not at all fatty. Just yummy. And but because it goes so well together, the little old blue-haired ladies did find some time to make their magnificent special version of banana pudding, the one where they use the Lorna Doones instead of vanilla wafers, and use the custard from instead of just plain vanilla pudding, and they use pineapple in addition to the bananas and homemade whipped cream and all that. And I tell you what, the deacons launched into that, brethren and sistren. You could. If you've ever heard what it sounds like when a huge, huge infestation of locusts lands and begins, you know, times a billion or whatever. Well, banana pudding isn't particularly crunchy, but oh, the deacons were gnashing away, and I mean there wasn't even a shred of pineapple left for the little ones, which means they'll just have to work all the harder to become deacons later on. But then the deacons trundled up their massive bulk, up a couple of flights of stairs, wandered out into the parking lot, and set to chain smoking out there with the sinners. It takes a lot of chain smoking to get you through 3 hours of prayer meeting Wednesday for our nicotine addicted deaconate. But in short order, with little more than the merest wave of the solar-powered, solar-charged cattle prod that Sister Carol Baker keeps in her possession. And I tell you what, it's been some great weather for solar charging the solar-powered cattle prod. Oh, yeah. It was just a crackling. Oh, and with the humidity, she just showed up there at the vestibule door, pressed the button, and it instantaneously fried and ozonized some water in the surrounding air, and the blood just plumb drained out of all the deacons' faces, and they threw down their cigarettes like they'd been caught in the boys' room when they were in seventh grade, and they lit out. Oh, I mean, they were hauling the mail, brethren and sister, and they were. And they shot past Sister Carol Baker, blew through the vestibule, past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, came on down the center aisle, and they are gathered now here before us all, brethren and sister. They're gathered here before us all with those heavy, heavy brass plates with the velvet lining, so you can't hear the tinkling of the change. But you can still see the little PayPal button that you press in the bottom of it. And they're getting ready to move amongst the congregation as we prepare for the offertory hymn in the hopes that we will raise $380 this evening. 10 at 38, 38 at 10. You know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so I'll call the minister of music up, and just remember, with every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, except the one you keep squinched open just a little bit, so as you can see the plate coming at you, and don't get a concussion here in the middle of prayer meeting Wednesday. Brethren and sistren, with every head bowed and every eye closed, I'm going to call the minister of music forward to lead us in the offertory hymn. Hallelujah.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes. Because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. never said religion should be free.
Oh, what's up? Roasted on the real raw and a brawl a suet. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, and welcome one and all to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I'm a calling upon you now, brethren and sister, and we don't do the altar call at the end of the service. We do it at the beginning just so as we can have freshly saved souls, glory, reveling in their salvation. I'm a calling on you now to get up out of your seats and onto your feet, brethren and sister, and amen. Wiggling, you know, you don't even have to wiggle past your neighbor. Just wait patiently. I want everybody down here. I want everybody to come on down that blood red carpet and assemble together, falling upon your knees, laying hands upon your neighbor, nicely, of course, until somebody is laying their hands upon the subwoofer there beneath the altar. And we're all feeling the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through us from the server on high. Amen and amen. I am Archpope Uber Rabbi Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Bob Kincaid. And this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Brethren and sistren, I'm telling you, we got some work in front of us here, because, as always, Christianity, brethren and sistren, is under assault here in Merca. Yes, indeed. The devil is a-stalking the country, and the devil don't want ministers of the gospel to be a-ministering, including 36-year-old Chad Robison of Lecanto, Florida. Chad Robison, music director at Seven River Presbyterian Church in Lecanto, Florida, brethren and sistren. Because he was a ministering to the young'uns, the children's. And a co-worker, motivated by Satan, went a-nosing through Chad Robison's private computer files. Yes. The devil will make you go a-snooping like that. He will, because he's crafty that way. The devil made the co-worker go a-snooping through 36-year-old Chad Robison's computer files. And right there, they found, according to the Citrus County, Florida Sheriff Mike Prendergast, quote, on his personal laptop, we have more than 3,000 videos and 350,000 photographs that our detectives have combed through. I want to emphasize this is a textbook case of an online sexual predator. Imagine the sorry state our country is in now that a man of the gospel can be called an online sexual predator just because he's got 3,000 videos and 350,000 photographs. He's been charged, see, he's being persecuted by the persecutor, the persecuting attorney. He's been charged with 3 counts of lewd and lascivious exhibition with a victim less than 16 years of age. They persecuting him with another charge of knowingly promoting sexual performance by a child. And they threw 3 more charges of video voyeurism for a lichen to watch. According to the persecutors, minister of the gospel, former youth pastor, and music director, Chad Robison would establish contact with younger girls in video chat rooms, and then he'd get them to expose themselves to him, and I don't mean spiritually, expose themselves to him while he was a recording the interactions. And he even got some of them to engage in sexual acts. What's more, in an effort, I'm sure, to find out just how sinful these little girls were, he set up a camera in the bathroom of his own home, where he'd video them without them a-knowing, as recently as in the last few months. The church members are being questioned as the law enforcement people look for more victims, or as Christianity considers them, harlots. Oh, God. There's really one or two of these a week, aren't there? 36 years old and gets his jollies by watching underage, you know, because see, I mean, if you're out there watching porn, your porn actresses under federal law are supposed to be at least 18 years old. And well, where's the fun in that, huh? It's only when they're 11, 12, 13. That's when it gets, because that's when they're pure and virginal, like Christ wants them, like Christianity teaches they need to be until they go to their merge bed. Get this. Now, you heard me earlier. 3,000 videos, 350,000 photographs. How long would it take? Because I don't know. I don't even know how you'd go about doing the video recording part of it. I mean, if he did one a day, that's 365. We're talking about approaching 10 years of this. 350,000 photographs by this minister of the saving grace gospel of Christ Jesus. Guess how much his bail is. Well, one, bail was set for him. Two, it was set at $26,000. That's around $8.75 per video. $26,000. So if bail is $26,000, that means somebody can come up with, you pay a bail bondsman $2,600, and this minister of this former youth pastor, this music, the music director at Seven River Presbyterian in Lecanto, Florida, he's on the streets. There's a little bit of wow to that, isn't there? $26,000 for a guy who preyed on young girls. That's, wow. But, you know, man of the cloth and all that. And you know, remember, within the strictures of Christianity, all he has to do is say, "Jesus, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jesus." And he'll be forgiven. And when he dies, he'll get to go to heaven. And live forever and ever and all eternity at the right hand of God. Yeah, I know. Silly, isn't it? But that's the kind of stuff you wind up with on prayer meeting Wednesday. And if that's, you know, if that's one, it's not like that's anything new. I managed to let Cardinal Pell. Well, there was no prayer meeting Wednesday last week, of course. But back toward the end of June, the third most powerful man in the entire Roman Catholic Church was charged back home in Australia with being a child rapist. The charges arise from the Australian state of Victoria, and the charges were made by a number of people, according to Police Deputy Commissioner Shane Patton. These are numerous sex offenses because it sort of feeds into, the whole authority structure makes it more likely than not that this kind of thing will happen. Holy cow, that's probably the wrong phrase. I heard a story just yesterday about a boys choir in Europe, where in the years after the Second World War, I guess if you wanted to sing in the boys choir and go to the boys choir school, you had to get yourself all raped, because that happened, because, you know, God is love, y'all. All right. Cardinal Pell says that he says, "I'm looking forward to finally having my day in court. I'm innocent of these charges. They're false. The whole idea of sexual abuse is abhorrent to me, especially the getting caught part." According to law enforcement sources in Australia, Deputy Commissioner Patton said Cardinal Pell is facing multiple charges and there are multiple complainants. Particulars have not been released. There was a hearing earlier to decide whether or not they would be. He is a conservative Roman Catholic. He doesn't like all this liberalism in the church, what with, that started like with the Vatican II in the early 1960s. He hates him some same-sex marriage, he hates him some homos, and he hates him some contraception, and he's still convinced that Roman Catholic priests should remain celibate, you know, even though there's nothing in the Bible about that. He's really eager to go back to Australia, you know, if his health permits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no word on whether his health will permit. I suspect that whether his health permits has a lot to do with the likelihood of the proof of the charges. I'm just guessing, but yeah. There's this too. A woman who is running in the Democratic primary for a Senate seat in Arizona. A woman by the name of Deidre Aboud. She's a lawyer in Phoenix, and she is a Muslim. And after announcing her candidacy, and after posting a message on Facebook that read as follows: almost 250 years ago, a group of dreamers came together and sketched out a revolutionary vision. No longer would they be shackled to the whims of a distant government. This was her 4th of July post, you know. No longer would they be shackled to the whims of a distant government, nor bound to the religion of an idiosyncratic king. They set out to forge their own futures, determine their own destinies, and follow their own faith. In their infinite wisdom, the Founding Fathers decreed that this nation would separate church and state, and in so doing, protect both institutions. Government would be free from religious overreach, and religion would be free from government interference. That's it. I mean, that's just it. This then drove the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians crazy. S. Jason Parr responded to her saying, "Nice try, but your first love is Satan, a.k.a. Allah, and your second love is to a litter box your people," people were in scare quotes, "come from. You are as American as Chinese checkers." And a quick question for the research team. Which is the entire Horn Family Community Congregation. Wasn't Chinese checkers invented in the United States? I'm just asking. I don't know, maybe it really does go back to ancient China. Who knows? Not something I've ever bothered myself to learn. Steve in New York, wait a sec. 350,000 photographs, going back to the former youth pastor there in Florida. By my cipher, and that's downloading one photo per second, 8 hours a day for over 12 days. Well, that and the 10 years for 3,000 videos, it kind of makes you wonder how he found any time to minister the gospel, doesn't it? But yeah, I get it. So, because she posted something about religious tolerance and freedom, people did go just nuts. Chris Ruin, I don't know who that is, said, all caps, of course, "Ban Islam in the USA! We hate your filthy death cult!" Then some other someone named Tony Madden said, "I bet you'll be a," all caps, "blast with constituents." Deidre Aboud comes from Little Rock, Arkansas. She's from the Little Rock Abouds. She converted to Islam 19 years ago. God knows why. Not for me to question or for you. Welcome to religious freedom in the United States. I'm just where I am. I'm baffled that anybody in the 21st century engages in any of these old monotheistic Abrahamic religions at all, especially the women folk, considering how these religions generally treat you know, women. But she did. She converted to Islam 19 years ago. Right after the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, she opened the Council on American Islamic Relations first office in Arizona. Jacqueline Friedman, who is her spokeswoman, said that threats have been they've been a regular fact of the campaign so far. Jacqueline Friedman said, "We make sure to have police escorts at our events because, yes, we've received a lot of hate. We had an event at the Pomegranate Cafe that the alt-right showed up at." Oh, and just because you might find this interesting, the person she would ostensibly face in November is Jeff Flake, the Republican of Arizona, who, by virtue of the fact that, and understand, this guy's still a freak, okay? He's still a total right-wing freak. There's nothing moderate about him, but he just couldn't get on board with all the healthcare shenanigans. And he said some unkind things about Comrade Kumquat a while back. And in what is typically taken to be a sort of unheard of thing, and certainly a violation of Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not criticize another Republican, the Trump regime has been trying to find Republicans to run in the primary against Jeff Flake. No kidding. But Jeff Flake said, heard about all this filthy religious-based hate and tweeted, "Hang in there at Deidre 2018. Sorry you have to put up with this. Lots of wonderful people across Arizona. You'll find them." I don't think it's that she's been unable to find the wonderful people across Arizona. It's that the not-so-wonderful people have found her. But I'm funny that way. So Flake puts that out on Twitter, which immediately garners the following response. "Sorry, but Muzzies should be DQ'd, disqualified, from holding office as their cult isn't compatible with the Constitution." Muzzies. Yeah. Adding, going back to the story of the youth minister in Florida, Ron, who is not presently in the frozen north, which isn't frozen at the moment. It's rather rainy and soggy up there, or has been. We're being frontiered this evening, but by patching together every other word, I think I understand your story about the music director who has apparently confused hand jive with hand job. Here's one for you. I did a little bit of ciphering. Steve did a little ciphering. Ron asks, "I wonder how many congregants shook hands with him each week." You know, I hear if you just stick your hand if you take maybe a gallon of rubbing alcohol and mix it with a gallon of that fresh mint Listerine and stick your hand in it for about 15 days, you might be eventually able to forget about, you know, shaking hands with Pastor Perv. Yeah, when Ron says they're being frontiered, what he means by that is that, like ever so many West Virginians, Kelly, his sister, has really, really awful, shitty, terrible, no good internet service courtesy of Frontier Communications, the same internet service provider which I use here, and which I can guarantee you really does sucketh mightily. Now, it's not a religious story at all, but, you know, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. We can bounce around. Lawsuits have been filed in the state of West Virginia by Frontier and all the cable companies because in a moment of, it's one of those moments of even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. The legislature of West Virginia, back during the session when they were doing lots of other things besides passing a budget, well, they passed a bill that, to encourage small rural co-ops to band together to provide internet service to underserved or unserved areas. You know, places where Shentel and Suddenlink and Frontier don't and won't go. Well, Frontier and the cable companies have now sued after Governor Jim Justice signed the bill into law, saying that we're terribly, terribly worried about this. We think it's unconstitutional because, you know, these uneducated hillbilly internet co-ops might damage our equipment on the poles. Because, see, the bill allows the co-op access to the utility poles so that they can string internet to rural areas of West Virginia. Because, for the most part, internet in West Virginia sucks like a mighty wind. I mean, for instance, what this program is reaching you over is a connection that is 10 down and 1 up. And we push that one up to its very last bit, bite, booger, whatever it is, every night. And the funny thing is, nobody believes the excuse given by Shentel and Frontier, because frankly, they're not exactly delivering much in the way of service anyway, and they charge a small goddamn fortune for it. What they're trying to do is protect their sinecures. Wouldn't that be cool? Because there's like lots of grant money out there. If you can get a group of people together, form a little internet co-op, and run some high-speed internet access out to places that aren't served, so that, you know, the modern world can come to, you know, various and sundry hills and hollers. It's almost reminiscent of what happened way, way, way back in the Depression when, it's a time when my ancestors, including my mother as a young girl, the electricity they had in their homes was provided by AC Delco batteries. Maybe it was just Delco batteries back then. That's how you had lights. That's how you powered the radio, if you had a radio. And when the battery ran down, you'd take it to the store and swap it for a charged-up battery, and away you'd go again, and you'd have some more light. Doesn't that just sound delightful? Well, it was all because power companies didn't want to run electricity out to these rural areas because they said there was no way they could make any money at it. So the FDR administration came up with something called the REA, the Rural Electrification Act, and said, okay, well, the government will do it then, because, you know, government, we the people, more perfect union, promote the general welfare, all that stuff. Yeah, we're just going to, and all of a sudden, the power company said, wait a minute, the big old government's going to go into business against us? Well, no, not really, you're not out there doing anything, you're not providing these services. Well, maybe we will. Will you give us some money to do it? Well, we might. Will you give us a whole lot of money to do it? Maybe. So with the help of some welfare for the poor little electric power companies, AC power was extended along power poles to further reaches, so that I guess that put a whole lot of Delco battery workers out of jobs. Oddly enough, we weren't running political campaigns back then saying, what about the Delco battery workers? And you didn't have them standing in front of radio microphones saying, my granddaddy was a Delco battery worker, and my daddy was a battery worker, and I'm a battery worker, and what about the FDR war on batteries? Well, it was a simpler time then. But I thought I would just tell you that story in conjunction with the fact that internet service there at Kelly's just, bites. Yeah. Oh, another little, it's funny the way things work out. A little hearing was had in the House of Representatives recently. I don't know if you'll hear about this on any other programs. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's nice to talk about things that aren't Trump. Well, there I went and said his name. Now I have to stand in a bucket and sing. Stand with my foot in the bucket. Anyway. The hearing was about self-driving cars. Because I guess they're closer to, our present is closer to their future than maybe we think. They're testing them in Pittsburgh and testing them in California. That I'm still not crazy about the idea. I guess I'm a curmudgeon or a codger or a coot or a whatever. But I like to drive. I get actual pleasure from it. Call me crazy. I think all kinds of thoughts when I'm driving, especially driving by myself. When it's me, when it's Agnes and me, we laugh and we carry on. We have a lovely time together. And in the past, when it's been the family, the whole family together, we've had some damn fine times in the automobile, hurtling down the road. But apparently, Debbie Dingell and Fred Upton, who are both members of the House from Michigan, testified about how the future was coming, and the future's going to get here, and America has to lead, or else we'll be left behind by China and Japan and the EU, because everybody's all going to be self-driving automobiles. And, they're from Michigan and everything, so naturally, they're all for self-driving automobiles. And I'm not necessarily going to take a position one way or the other on them, except to say that I like to drive. And there's something kind of creepy. I mean, when it comes to automobiles, I have a control fetish that, is as broad as the Mississippi River. I don't like not being in control, but I can sort of tamp it down, if I'm on an airplane, because I realize I don't know how to fly airplanes. Kind of take a deep breath and sort of relax if it's a bus. Cabs in places like D.C., I don't know. I trust the D.C. cabbies. But I like to drive. I like to be the one behind the wheel. I don't do roller coasters, because I don't like things that seem out of control. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. We're going to get self-driving automobiles. So the upshot of these hearings were to sort of get a handle on how we would go boldly into that future. And so do you remember within the last couple of nights we were talking about the fact that, it was a conversation that I had with Jim a couple of nights ago, where I talked about the many, many instances in which this nation has 50 separate sets of laws because we've got 50 separate petty little kingdoms making 50 sets of petty little laws. Insurance, health care, rules of the road. Well, I thought of that when I was when I was reading about this self-driving car story, because lo and behold, remember this is a House of Representatives that is run by a bunch of small government Republican conservatives. Want small government. Well, lo and behold, there's a bill in the House right now that would preempt, because that's what the doctrine is called, preemption. It would preempt every safety law that any given state could promulgate in favor of one federal safety law for self-driving autonomous automobiles. How about that? Because the Congress, or whoever's sponsoring this bill, I don't have the particulars, is of the opinion that it would probably create chaos to have 50 separate laws about how autonomous automobiles should be regulated to operate. You know, once upon a time, we had that kind of chaos in the earliest days of the automobile. Early on, there was a notion that just because it was legal for you to drive an automobile in Massachusetts didn't necessarily mean it was legal for you to drive an automobile in New Hampshire. But we found our way through it. But in many ways, that 50 petty kingdoms with 50 petty sets of laws is one of the central problems that has always bedeviled our country. You know, boards of education, that kind of thing. So that you can have a wealthy county where kids get a great public school education, or if you have the misfortune of living in a poor county, your kids get a shit public education. All within the same state. Could be two adjacent counties. Steve from Georgia, Stan and I were talking. And he was talking about the fact that, you know, some states require this kind of insurance coverage. Other states require a different kind of insurance coverage. Some require uninsured. Some don't require underinsured. And it's just a mess. But there's this notion that bedevils us. That somehow or another, we are less free if laws are made for everybody in this country and not just a few. The single biggest exemplar of that being, to my mind, voting. The only reason there are different laws for how people vote in this country is because there are parts of this country that don't like the idea of certain people voting. Even the issue of, it's a little complicated, isn't it? I don't necessarily want Big Bad Vladdy Daddy coming over to vote. But he certainly has exerted some influence in government, hasn't he? The story was breaking last night as the program was ending. about how back during the G20 meeting, the Tangerine Tiberius slipped away for an hour's worth of BFF time with Pooty Poot. It was just him and Pooty Poot and Pooty Poot's translator. So the President of the United States, who tells us that he has been genetically gifted with such an awesome freaking brain, was sitting there carrying on a translated conversation that he had no actual idea whether it was being properly translated or not. I mean, my God, you can almost imagine Comrade Kumquat looking at Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, who, after all, is just snuggly and huggable, and, I mean, you'd probably just melt right in front of him. He's so sweet. They won't let him out in the rain because sugar melts, you know. You can almost imagine Comrade Kumquat looking at him going, you still got those videos? At which point, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy shakes his head no and says, da. Saying two things at one time, and, you know, Marcus Aurelius says, whew, so I don't have to worry about that anymore? And he shakes his head no and says, da. But I guess we can, and so all the questions were about, you know, well, what could they possibly have talked about for 2 hours? And the for-profit media consensus seemed to be that they were talking about the properties that the Kenyan Muslim usurper seized in retaliation for the skullduggery practiced by the Russians during the election. But today another story broke saying that the Clementine Caligula had in fact ordered that the CIA no longer fund anti-Assad rebels in Syria. So I guess we know what they talked about. You do not want anyone to see those videos, do you? Those are some very, very interesting videos, Donald. It would be terrible shame if those videos were to get out in public and be seen perhaps by your lovely wife or the entire American people, wouldn't it, Donald? So you will stop arming the anti-Assad rebels, no? No? Da. Good. So maybe no one will see pee-pee videos anytime soon. Good for you, Donald, is good for me, huh?
Yeah, proving that great minds think alike, Asa just noted, Bob, that wasn't BFF time with Pooty Poot. It was P-tape review time.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Oh, and I want to go back to a story that we were, that in particular came up in my conversation with the Angry Indian last night. The story of the Australian woman gunned down by the police officer. Gut shot. Last night, I got a note coming. I got a note from Robert in Australia, and I didn't get to it last night. I wanted to get to it
I want to make sure I got to it this evening because Robert raised some very, some most valuable points. Robert said the Australian Police Service is far from perfect. Most are. On average, they're pretty good. And then in boldface, Robert writes, when you call the police here in Australia, you do not expect them to ever, all caps, ever draw their weapons. I think we've had 50 police-related shootings in the last decade, Robert observes. And he says, and yes, people here in Australia are upset about this, and I think it's because most Australians don't understand what is happening in the U.S. with regards to police shooting innocent civilians. I'd warrant most Australians, I'd warrant Robert's right. It is, if you live in anything resembling civilization, it is awfully damn difficult to wrap your arms around the barbarity that is the United States of America. And I don't know how to explain it except to say that there's a level of paranoia that attaches to the police here that maybe doesn't attach in Australia. The police seldom draw their weapons in Australia because they know that they're seldom going to go to a situation in which weapons have been drawn already. It's not necessary for the police to draw weapons in Australia because there just aren't that many people who are taking pot shots at the cops in Australia. This is not some sort of defense of the police. It is, however, an acknowledgement of reality. Almost every time the National Rifle Association, America's most well-funded, well-connected, politically powerful domestic terror organization, proposes some cockamamie new law, bloodthirsty, blood-soaked cockamamie new law, meant to put more guns into more hands in this country, if you pay attention, you'll notice that the National Association of Sheriffs, or the National Association of Chiefs of Police, you'll notice that they will say, you know, I don't know if this is such a good idea. Because the greater number of guns in the hands of the citizenry, the higher the likelihood some member of the citizenry is going to take umbrage at a law enforcement action, which will then give the police a reason to use the guns. Yeah, I still haven't, despite what Dana Lush said a while back, I still haven't seen that march through Falcon Heights, Minnesota by the NRA in support of the right of, you know, people who are darker than a brown paper bag, in support of their rights to have concealed carry permits and tote guns all over creation. In fact, it is the exact opposite. There's this thing called NRA TV. Don't know how to find it. Don't want to. Not going to tell. No. But the host of NRA TV, which is an online TV network of some sort, you know, hosted by the National Rifle Association, America's most powerful, most wealthy, well-connected domestic terror organization, Grant Stinchfield, kind of sounds like a parcel of farmland covered in cow shit, doesn't it? Stinchfield. Well, he's trying to get internet famous by gun trolling America. And I must say, he is, in fact, succeeding. Media Matters picked up on some of his recent work. And NRA-TV's recent work. When Stinchfield started talking about race relations in the United States. And whenever some pasty-faced, doughy white dude starts talking about race relations, you can generally go to the bank on the idea that we're not going to be talking about any real-world solutions or exhibiting any understanding of the overall problem of race in this country. No, you're going to get probably something nasty. And so the same organization that can't quite bring itself to march over the right to carry of Philando Castile is, on the other hand, really, really worried about what those people are going to do to all the good God-fearing, Second Amendment-revering, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual, white folks.
Race relations are strained here in America after 8 years of Barack Obama, but nowhere is near as bad as it is in South Africa, where white farmers are being tortured and killed almost every day in racist violence. It is a warning for the United States that you will never hear from the mainstream media in this country. Veteran Army Ranger and Frontlines correspondent Chuck Holton joins me more with more on this. Chuck, I know you've been looking...
You wait a minute. You know what would make this program really cool is if I had some more of those Sounders stuff. Like, did you hear that? I mean, that's really, really
country.
Cool.
Veteran Army Ranger and Frontlines correspondent Chuck Holton joins me more.
I wonder, do I have anything like that? Wait a minute. Boy, that would be good. Veteran Army Ranger Chuck Holton. Veteran Army Ranger, NRA spokescreep, and racist Chuck Holton joins me now. We may have to look into that. But did you catch the opening line there? Our race relations are strained here in America after 8 years of Barack Obama. Son of a bitch. Barack Obama caused the strain in race relations. Who knew? Back there on January the 19th, 2009, there was race relations in this country. It was just a calm and glassy sea with no conflict, complete happiness. And along comes the Kenyan Muslim usurper, and we get 8 years of strained racial relations because of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't have anything to do with weirdo political candidates who say things like, go back to Africa, when he starts talking a bunch of racist horse shit. No. I mean, because Merca. Right? Because that happened recently. In a political event in Florida. We're back to Florida again. Yeah. Mayoral candidate Paul Congemi was confronted by members of the Uhuru movement. Their leader is Jesse Neville. There was a debate yesterday, and Paul Congemi, Congemi, by the way, is not an old Cherokee name or an old Chickasaw name or an old Seminole name or an old Cree name or an old Anishinaabe name or it's not. And you'll probably pick it up. And this is Florida, but check the accent. So the Uhuru movement is challenging him, and Paul Congemi responds. Ah, come on. Really? Here we go. Someday. This is too good not to wait for. Man, you set this stuff up and then, you know, whoops.
Mr. Neville, you and your people, you talk about reparations. The reparations that you talk about, Mr. Neville, your people already got your reparations. Your reparations came in the form of a man named Barack Obama.
No, really, he said that. He did. I told you it was worth the wait. This guy wants to be mayor of Tampa, Florida. God knows how many people will vote for him. Probably a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, mayor of St. Petersburg. Your people got your reparations in the form of Barack Obama. I had no idea that was the local accent down there. This, as you could tell from the laughter, engendered a little bit of disbelief in the group. Yeah, that's right. Let's see. 2008, 1608. Let's call it 400. Well, okay. 1608 to 1860. That's 265 years of bond slavery plus another 100 years of Jim Crow, and then the stuff that still lingers on to this day, for a total of 400 years of varied forms of abuse. And it's, according to Paul Congemi, it was all wiped away because you people got your reparations with a man named Barack Obama. That's all. That's worth hearing again.
The reparations that you talk about, Mr. Neville, your people already got your reparations. Your reparations came in the form of a man named Barack Obama.
Please hold your response.
My advice to you, if you don't like...
Here it comes. And it's an oldie but a goodie. It's been in use since, say, the 1950s or so. Just get the hockey puck. Maybe you'll spit it across the room. Just to be safe.
My advice to you, if you don't like it here in America... Planes leave every hour from Tampa Airport. Go back to Africa. Go back.
Side of the Ricks. Non-factor.
Yeah. Non-factor.
See the real enemy. Non-factor.
Go back to Africa. You know, because that right there, that's That's a Lakota accent is what that is. Maybe Iroquois. I don't know. But did you ever notice that? Black folks are the only people who are told to go back to, as if they came here by choice. They, I'm sorry. How else? Language. Nobody ever, see, the appropriate response to Paul Kangemi would have been to yell, "No, you go back to Italy." Because nobody ever looks at people, you know, of my heritage and says, go back to Scotland, go back to Ireland, go back to Germany, go back to England. There's no go back to Italy. God knows there's no go back to Russia these days. It's always go back to Africa. Back. Like they just got here. You know, day before yesterday, on a plane. Oh, son of a bitch. So, you know, so we've got that. Go back to Africa. Which takes us back to the boys at the NRA featuring, I got to do this right. Veteran Army Ranger and Front Ranger correspondent Chuck Holton. Yeah, it really does work better that way.
It is a warning for the United States that you will never hear from the mainstream media in this country. Veteran Army Ranger and Frontlines correspondent Chuck Holton joins me with more on this. Chuck, I know you've been looking into this particularly and doing some research, and really the things that we're starting to learn are frightening, and I guess it's not shocking that the mainstream media is not talking about this.
Right. You know, the parallels between what's happening in South Africa and the blatant racism and violence that we're seeing from people like the Black Lives Matter crowd, from people like Louis Farrakhan and his minions, is...
Yeah, right, because, see, Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, they're the very same people as Black Lives Matters. Yeah, sure. Pollen. And we're just like South Africa. Now, even though I just got a note from Steve saying I just swallowed my hockey puck with the go back to Africa. Yeah. I can only advise you that you really don't, you don't want to put the hockey puck down for a minute or two, because this is going to get so weird and so white so fast. Just, oh my God. People like Louis Farrakhan and his minions is happening in... Wait.
Violence that we're seeing from people like the Black Lives Matter crowd, from people like Louis Farrakhan and his minions, is happening in spades in South Africa.
No, he didn't. Yes, he did. Oh, thank you, Goddess of Irony. I will sacrifice a good half dozen rubber chickens at midnight tonight to your honor and your glory. The guy who says that Louis Farrakhan and Black Lives Matter are the same as people who are doing violence in South Africa, which you'll probably have to look up anyway, because this is some NRA asshole saying it, which probably means that it has nothing resembling the truth about it. Yes, he said that. happening in spades in South Africa. She's a good one, that goddess of irony. Oh, these poor assholes don't even know when they're about to be used by her, and yet she makes them her mouthpiece. In a conversation about Black Lives Matter and Louis Farrakhan and black folks in South Africa, this dumb bastard uses the word spades. Shit. You gotta work real hard to be that fucked up now, don't you? Yes, you do.
The violence against farmers is being called for by government officials. It's being celebrated by politicians. And, you know, the scary thing is, it's kind of a warning for what could happen in the United States if we continue to let this get out of control.
This what? If we continue to let this get out of control, roving bands of black people are going to attack farmers. Because maybe a couple of hundred years of, anger over things like apartheid. Not justifying. It's still going to be, it's still subject to verification. Because again, a member of America's most powerful, most wealthy domestic terror organization is making these allegations. And, well, I wouldn't trust a member of the inner circle of the NRA or who is he? I wouldn't trust veteran Army Ranger and front lines correspondent Chuck Holton with a dead skunk, let alone the truth. But it's a warning for what could happen in the United States if we continue to let this get out of control. You know, it's kind of interesting that nothing ever... whatever it is that he's saying is out of control is always a response to some outrage, some outrageous conduct by the power structure in this country. You know, like cops gunning down innocent people of color. Again, and 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 again. No, your stream is not skipping. It's just that there are that many agains.
To go down this path of, just this racial tension, this racial hatred that is being foisted on the American culture by the Black Lives Matter crowd. You know, I was at this very peaceful march over the weekend, this women's march, and there were a lot of Black Lives Matter people there. And, when you talk to people, they're all angry about this video that Dana Lash put out that said that, hey, when you go around and break things and burn cars and spray paint buildings, that you leave the police no choice but to do their job.
You leave the police no choice but to shoot somebody down in cold blood who wasn't doing anything wrong. They have no choice. Sometimes it gets so bad that they have to shoot a white Australian woman. That's how bad it gets. They have no choice.
Somehow that was equated as a call for violence. That's not a call for violence. That's saying when you act like an idiot, the police come and do what the police are supposed to do when you act.
So that wasn't the closed fist of freedom. That was just pure love and sunshine. That was nonviolent. Absolutely, the closed fist of freedom.
Like an idiot, and that is arrest you. And somehow, like this guy on.
See, it's not the arrest you part that causes the problem. It's the kill you part. That seems to be lost on veteran Army Ranger. Wait a minute. Veteran Army Ranger and Frontlines correspondent Chuck Holton. Forgive me, but I'm liking that more and more.
on Fox last night on Martha McCallum's show, somehow trying to say that that's us calling for violence. It's exactly the opposite. It's us calling out the violent and saying this has to stop. And if you want to see why it has to stop, you look at South Africa. Over between 3,000 and 4,000 white South Africans have been killed in the most horrific ways, brutalized, raped, tortured, drugged behind cars.
Drugged behind cars, really? South Africa's kind of behind the times, aren't they? We've been doing that to black people in this country for quite some time now. Killed in the most horrible manners. Huh, really? You mean like shot to death in front of his significant other and their kid in a car with no gun in his hand or anything? Killed in the most horrifying manner. You mean choked to death on the streets of New York? You mean gunned down, just standing with a toy pistol in his hand, being all 12 years old and stuff? You mean shot in the back, running away? No, see, those aren't really, really horrifying ways to die. It's only horrifying if you're white.
I had drills taken to them, some really horrific things.
And Chuck, one common theme here with what's going on in South Africa is that it is very hard to get a firearm now in South Africa as well to protect yourself. And right. Many of these people that are being victimized need that kind of protection.
Yeah, goddammit, they need guns. What they need in South Africa is guns because the drills aren't doing a good enough job. Yeah, damn Skippy. Whew. Aye, aye. Could see it. There's a presumption there that in South Africa, if more people can buy guns, they'll make sure that, you know, only the white people can buy the guns. Not all those crazy, violent, you know, black people. Because they know better than to sell guns to. They learned that. They learned their lesson about that back during the colonial phase. You know, you let the natives get their hands on the gun, and it's just Shaka Zulu all over again. Mm-hmm.
See what's going on in America, specifically California. Look, there's another bill in California to limit the one gun a month plan that they have in California to all guns, not just handguns.
Wait a minute. You're kidding me. California might say that you can only buy one gun a month? These must be some mighty talented NRA members out there. I mean, what are they doing? Pulling a trigger with each individual toe? I mean, and I didn't know you could do that. Guys, really? One gun a month. Because, you know, those guns are like bread. You know, they go stale after a little while, and you only buy one a month.
If you don't think your Second Amendment rights can be destroyed, just look at California. Just look at Europe. Just look at South Africa. And once they take the guns away from you, now look at what's going on. They operate with impunity to do whatever they want to the citizenry, and we're seeing that in South Africa now.
Wait a minute. Okay, so I got lost. That's where I got lost. They operate with impunity, and they do whatever they want to the citizenry in South Africa. But it's the government taking away the guns, so it's the government doing this to the poor white families in South Africa? Makes your little head hurt after a while. White folks are skeert here in Merca. So here we are at the halfway point of the program. We had $380 to raise this evening. We are still at zero. I hope we don't push ourselves towards some sort of necessary Friday on the front porch human miracle. It would be nice to knock some of this down this evening. Very nice indeed. Steve in New York pointing out the Second Amendment doesn't apply in Europe and South Africa. But they need one there. See, that's the point, Steve. They need one. They need a Second Amendment because they don't have any freedom there. Ron in Raleigh, meanwhile, says, let me get this straight. When fans overturn cars and set shit on fire after a championship, the police need to bust caps in their white asses because they're asking for it? Well, no, because white, Ron. That's not dangerous violence. That's just white European exuberance. That's what that is. Yep, right. So let's not get things confused here. Can we do that? By the way, going back to internet issues that I mentioned a little bit ago, Ron points out, make America great in the first place. South Korea has the fastest internet speeds in the world at 26.1 Mbps, whereas the United States pokes along at 12 Mbps, not even in the top 10 in the world, yet we pay some of the highest prices in the world. The South Koreans pay about $30 a month for their service. Obviously, not only do we have the best health care, we also have the best internet. Yeah. Oh, and before I take a break for the halfway mark, we did the research department did get on the question of Chinese checkers. Asa pointing out neither China nor USA, Chinese checkers were in fact invented in Germany. Michael and Madison confirming that. A variation invented in Germany is a variation of an older American game, Chinese in name only. Oh, and the misleading name was an American invention, you know, a marketing gimmick. Yep. So, as American as Chinese checkers actually means American, because we didn't invent the game, but we invented the name. Oops. Okay. Yeah, we definitely got a cowbell for Robert in Australia. So has that guy in Florida told the white South Africans, if you don't like it here, then go back to Europe yet? No, not yet, Robert. Somehow or another, they never get told to go back to where they... No, it's just the Africans need to go back. Just once, I'd like to see here an indigenous person here in this country say, hey, you hate this land so much, you want to poison it so much, go back to France and poison your own country. Wouldn't that be delicious? Wouldn't that just be, oh, wouldn't that be righteous? Yeah, it would. So anyway, we are at the halfway point of the program. I have somehow or another managed to fill a Bobster 93 minutes away. And so we'll take a break. See if you guys want to engage in any conversation. You know how to reach the program, right? Area code 304-663-4676. Area code 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. And area code 304-574-8178 is the other line. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Any of those will get you into the program, and I welcome the conversation and look forward to it. I was recently informed by Sylvia that TuneIn isn't working. I don't know why. I have absolutely no influence with TuneIn whatsoever. But I'm trusting that the stream is getting out in various forms because I'm getting, you know, emails and stuff, so that's cool. V.T. Blom also pointed out the Chinese checkers thing, too. Thank you, V.T. Blom. Hoghead says, you ever seen Gangs of New York? It gives an idea of how the Irish were treated when they got here. Nobody was well-treated when they got here. Except the people who got here first, the first Europeans who got here, established dibs on treating everybody else who came here later like shit. And even, you know, even within their own ethnicities, the English who got here first treated later English like shit. And the Irish like shit, and the Scots like shit. I mean, there's a reason that my ancestors didn't stick around over there by the coast and kept going until they ran out. Until they ran out of people to annoy the shit out of them, and were actually willing to live on the frontier and risk confrontation with the with the native peoples. You got to be pretty not fond of the other colonists to do what they did. I can drive from here to roughly Williamsburg, Virginia, you know, in about 8 hours, a little less. It's a big difference. It's a whole lot different to think about doing it in, say, 1750. Which is when my ancestors were doing it. Because he grew up around there, I actually got a little bit of a primer from Ron as we went around the golf course yesterday about a little tiny area in Greenbrier County called Williamsburg and Sinking Creek. That's where my ancestors were, and that was the damn western frontier in 1760 in this country. And the bloodshed and the struggles and the murder, well, it's a hell of a history that very few people know. And because the people we're talking about are largely Scots, Scots-Irish, Germans, they were motivated to get away from the people who treated them like shit. And then, because we're talking about the spread of dysfunction, they moved into the frontier and treated the indigenous people like shit. It all rolls downhill, doesn't it? Sure does. Okay, thank you, Mark. Mark letting me know. Fine here. Appreciate it, Mark. As does James, coming in fine here in Illinois. Okay, I don't know. Sylvia, I hope you're getting it by now. So, yeah, we'll take a break. We got lots of other high points to hit in the course of the evening. If you don't want to engage in conversation, filibobsters are not a problem for me. Just by way of a little song for the break, there's a new song out by Randy Newman. You got a friend in me, that one. But there's some. Oh, God, there's some beautiful, beautiful stuff that he's written over the years. What is it, Louisiana 1927? That's just gorgeous. But apparently, Randy Newman is not a big fan of... Not a big fan of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Randy Newman has a new album coming out. It's called Dark Matter. And in an interview with Vulture, he said that he had thought about writing about Donald Trump, but that he'd actually done it, but the song was never released because it was too vulgar and felt too easy. Well, let's be the judge of that, shall we? This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, yeah, we got $380 to raise this evening. It'd be awfully nice not to lay a goose egg on a prayer meeting Wednesday. I mean, I was nice enough not to block the doors. And, you know, doesn't that count for something?
Listen in. A great man is speaking. We fought a war for this. I'm almost ashamed. The Mediterranean. Now there's a resort worth fighting for. If only the Greeks or the Turks would start to sniff around. Well, I'd bring the hammer down. So quick their woolly heads would spin. Woody head. Oh, wait a minute. Even better. What if the Kurds got in the way? Hey, Kurds and wait. Kurds and wait. Sometimes a people is greater than their leader. Germany, Kentucky, and France. Country. One shot at glory, they don't get a second chance. Drag these peasants, kicking and screaming, into the 21st century. I thought we'd make it, must have been dreaming. These chicken farmers and fire floods gonna be the death of me. I can't do it. Girl.
Oh, what makes me think that in the next 24 hours or so, I'll get at least two or three cranky emails telling me that I'm an establishment shill? Yeah, why not? No, but Randy Newman said he had, in fact, written a Trump song, but he could remember the lyrics. He didn't record it. It was too easy. But the lyrics, he said in the interview, were, "My dick's bigger than your dick. It ain't bragging if it's true. My dick's bigger than your dick. I can prove it, too. There it is. There's my dick. Isn't that a wonderful sight? Run to the village, to town, to the countryside. Tell the people what you've seen here tonight." And he went on to tell Vulture, the chorus was, "What a dick, da-da-da, what a dick." And then he said, "I just didn't want to add to the problem of how ugly the conversation we're all having is, so I didn't put it out." You know, I don't think that's what makes the problem, that doesn't make the problem worse. Because we're not the ones making the problem worse. The problem is being made worse. And this will probably make the problem worse, too. Bernie Sanders has been interviewed. Chris Riotta, writing for Newsweek. Said that that he was aware that Russia was leaking the emails to create division in the Democratic Party. Bernie said, of course we knew that they were trying to cause divisiveness within the Democratic Party. That's no great secret. It's a secret. It's a big secret to, well, you know who, because it's not only a secret, it didn't happen. It was a leak, not a hack. Yeah. Has anybody noticed, by the way, that in all of this talk about Don Jr. and the rest of and the rest of the people on that otherwise, I guess it's the remake of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band cover. All those people in that meeting, who were not innocuous, by the way, nothing happened. Nothing happened in that meeting. Nothing. And yet, lo and behold, since the meeting was supposed to be about damaging information about Hillary Clinton, and Don Jr. said, oh, yeah, I want to hear that. Yeah, oh, cut me off a slice of that. Oh, baby. That, lo and behold, that's what began to happen thereafter. Funny the things that you don't find out when there's no honest broker of information in the room, isn't it? But lo and behold, after the meeting, that wasn't about anything, that wasn't about the thing that the thing was supposed to be about, but it wasn't a thing, that's when the stuff began to, filter out, filter, drip, 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 drip. And the next thing you know, a whole bunch of political naifs are running around going, fucking DNC, goddamn other establishment shills. And somebody else, Donald Trump, it would be terrible, but, he wouldn't be as bad as Hillary Clinton. She'll have us in World War III. Meanwhile, 35 million Americans are going, we're probably going to lose our health care. We don't care because, from the mud, the lily grows. Yeah. It's going to be because, see, that now, even though the for-profit media are telling us, the repeal of health care is dead. Senate can't get anything done. Oddly enough, they're still going to have debate and a vote in the next couple of weeks. And I'm guessing that Chinless Mitch doesn't routinely engage in acts of futility. That evil little bastard's two or three moves out in front of us. And even in front of, the Trump regime. Mm-hmm. And yeah, something like 33 million American people will lose health care on an outright repeal of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. But that'll be okay with the privileged people who say things like establishment shill, goddamn DNC. It'll be okay with them. Right? Sure. Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz. This is called not having one's eye on the ball. Doink. Yeah. You just, you know. Right, and as Trey from Kentucky Stan points out in the chat room, not for the first 2 years, because the goal will be to get them past the 2018 midterms. He's a clever little bastard. Apparently, the polio didn't affect his mind. Yeah. Okay, let's run over and check in with Scott in San Diego. And so did you find Scott? Did you find the Broomba on Amazon?
Wait a minute. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, you were cutting out there. I think it was my headset.
It was. I was hearing some wind.
Oh, well, I was sitting in front of the fan.
Well, that would explain it.
And now I've got.
It was either that or a tornado in San Diego. I'm glad it was just the fan.
Well, we don't get those hardly at all.
Yet.
At least, at least compared to the Midwest, where I lived for 20 years. The closest I ever got to a tornado, white or otherwise, was right before, maybe 6 months before I moved to San Diego. I was living in a condo in Cincinnati.
Jesus, I'd move to San Diego, too.
No, Cincinnati's not really a bad... Well, it wasn't a bad town when I lived there from, like, 96.
Not a bad place to be a white person, no.
Well, I guess it's all relative. But what the hell was I going to tell you? Oh, yes. Anyway, it was the dead of night. I'm sitting there looking at something on cable television, and they interrupt with that warning siren sound over the TV, indicating a special announcement is about to be made. And then they throw up the weather map, and then they throw up the little crawling graphic at the bottom of the screen.
And then they show the tornado, and they just throw up.
Then they show, moving eastward from Indiana, which is the next state over, on a plane. You know, the track of the tornado, in other words, was headed my way, okay? So I, like a fool, step out onto the front step, okay? Because it's the dead of night. I'm in my boxers and got my headphones on, listening to the weather bulletin. By this time, I've switched over to the local TV station, and they're giving, you know, the weather updates, because they're really good about that in the Midwest. Everywhere I've lived in Tornado Alley, they've been just excellent. Tulsa, part of Texas, although they didn't get tornadoes down in Corpus Christi, at least while I was there. But Kansas City, certainly, and then Cincinnati, which was where I was when this happened. But anyway, the local weather guys, they're showing the, what is it, the Doppler radar and all their gizmos and gadgets. And I don't think they had...
I'm loving the sound effects in the background this evening.
Earl Grey? No. Cheap coffee. I just got back from a couple of hours of running errands, not the least of which was attempting to get the electricity and the gas turned from the landlord's name over into my name. And I had to go to Social Security to get a document that shows disability, also income, and also my current address. Well, nobody told me. The guy I talked to at Social Security Tuesday said, yeah, you go down there, tell them what you want, they'll print it out, you'll be gone in 10 minutes. Well, what he didn't tell me is they close at noon on Wednesdays, okay? So I had a backup document which gave similar information, which it turned out I didn't need it. So my next stop was on to the electric company, or the building that I thought was the electric company. Turns out it's the corporate owner of the local electric company, and he told me where to go in a nice way. So he was helpful. Well, I had to go to Food for Less to get some milk and some soup. And I went to a different one than I normally go to. So I took the trolley, and it's in the little shopping center. And I look, I'm walking toward the Food for Less grocery store, and I look over, and I see a little storefront building that has SDGE, which means San Diego Gas and Electric. And I said, well, I wonder if that's like a branch office. Let me go in there and see if they can get this set up for me. So I waddle on in there, and the lady figured it all out, and now the electricity and the gas are turned over into my name. And I've only got to pay a $59 security deposit, which is way less than I thought it would be. Plus, some years ago, I had their service once before, like 13 or 14 years ago, and left under rather unfortunate circumstances, and I never cleaned it up. But thankfully, they didn't have any record of that to prevent me from getting the service turned on now. But anyway, I'm tired, I'm warm, I want to sit down in front of the fan, enjoy the show, and talk to you. And I didn't time it right. In other words, I called you before I finished stirring my coffee, which is what that lovely noise was.
I thought it was quite entertaining. It added a certain panache to the conversation, Scott.
Well, now, Brother Bob, if you listen very carefully, I will take the inaugural sip. You ready? Here goes.
With bated breath.
Okay, here we go. Mmm. Ah, that's good coffee.
Would that be Kenya Double A, Jamaican Blue Mountain, Costa Rican Impreza, Peruvian Fluvaxin, or I don't know what?
No, I don't have what you would call a big line item in the budget for coffee, nor are my taste buds all that discriminating, okay? And I will go ahead and give the name of what it is that I drink as coffee, but it will piss off a lot of my fellow left-wing people.
Folgers, Maxwell House?
No, it is a Nestle brand, I'm sorry to say. But it is Taster's Choice.
Oh.
Which
is this freeze-dried? Yes.
It is the best instant coffee. I mean, if you're forced to drink instant coffee, it is probably the best I've ever had, with the exception of some that I had 40 years ago that a friend of mine used to drink that had a Spanish name.
Me, I always preferred to just spit in a teaspoon with some Taster's Choice and cook it cook it in the spoon over a butane lighter. I mean, but I'm funny that way.
What did you mainline it?
It ain't gonna do your fucking taste buds any good. Never mind.
Well, I mean, my taste buds are at least good enough to know cheap instant coffee or even cheap ground coffee. Versus something that's a little bit better. And this, for my money and for my taste buds, is pretty good.
See, one of my favorite. Yeah, have you ever seen The In-Laws? I keep talking about it. I don't know who all has seen it.
I think I saw it years ago.
1979, Peter Falk, Alan Arkin.
Yes, I remember it vaguely.
He's the CIA agent, but he's very polite. He's very friendly. He's very nice.
Yeah.
And so in part of the early part of the caper, he's waiting in a diner somewhere in Manhattan. And he asks the bartender, and he says, he orders coffee. He says, is this coffee freeze dried? And the guy says, yeah, it's very good. So whenever I hear, it's very good. And that's the same scene where he doesn't know how the Price is Right works. So you're telling me that all these people got to guess how much all this crap costs? Yeah, haven't you ever seen The Price is Right? No, I've been out of the country a lot.
How old is that movie? Is it
1979.
Okay, so it was The New Price is Right with Bob Barker.
Right.
Yeah. You realize that there used to be The Price is Right from 56 until 65, I think. The host was Bill Cullen, who, for my money, is the best damn game show panelist or master ceremonies ever.
I don't know. As far as MC goes, you got to get up awful early in the morning to beat Gene Rayburn.
Oh, well, yeah, for just snarkiness and sort of mischievousness, Rayburn was tops. But as far as an all-around...
But Art Fleming never got anywhere near Alex Trebek.
Well, but it...
In terms of Jeopardy.
The Trebek version of Jeopardy is a dumbed-down version. If you ever have occasion to watch the classic Jeopardy with Art Fleming, the question, you had to have way more on the ball.
Yeah, what's the fifth digit to the right of the decimal of Avogadro's number? You're right.
You know, today it's like the final Jeopardy answer is, you know, Grant's tomb's occupant, you know? Or something equally as
simple. Oh, I don't
know.
Simple. I think Eugene Finnerman might take issue with you.
No, I don't know who
that
is.
Yeah, well, Eugene, until they changed the rules and allowed winners to just come back until they got beaten, Eugene was the winningest Jeopardy champion until Ken What's-His-Name broke all the rules.
The Mormon guy from somewhere.
Ken Jennings.
Yeah.
Jesus,
yeah.
Why do I even know that?
You're like me. You take all the information in, but you very rarely do a reorganization or, you know, a defrag or a data dump. I know shit that I am astonished.
Now, wait a minute.
I know.
Wait. The goddess just got you.
Okay, go ahead.
You said data dump and I know shit almost in the same breath. She's paying attention. You better watch yourself, Scott. Careful with that hot coffee or you'll be wearing it.
No, and I also use the term defrag. Isn't that when you reformat or when you clean up your hard drive?
Yeah, that's hard drive cleanup.
Yeah. Did I use the wrong term? Because I see there's some
stuff
that I know.
No, it's just you use shit and dump in the right.
Okay. Okay. Jesus. Why? How did we get onto this?
Oh, I don't know, but you've been referred to in the chat room as poor Scott. He's just a coffee heathen.
Well, yeah, I have no argument against that.
In fact, you would be despised in Seattle, Scott. I read a list, you know, the lists that they do like over on BuzzFeed, the absolute meaningless shit that just eats up your time.
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea. There's like a dating app out there called Hater that matches.
Hater as in?
H-A-T-E-R, Hater.
Jesus.
And it matches people up not by their common interests, but by the stuff that they hate, on the theory that if you hook people up who hate the same thing, that they're liable to get along. And I'm sure that whoever came up with that idea is a Silicon Valley gajillionaire now who's working on, I don't know, some libertarian nightmare.
Well, there may well be a little bit of truth to that notion.
Well, so what they did is they've been around long enough that they've got a data set.
Now, I'm just about ready to take a sip of coffee. You're not going to make it come through my nose, are you?
You know, you're in the hands of the goddess now, Scott.
Okay, go ahead.
So any social media company that comes up with data feels almost like salmon swimming upstream to spawn urge to delve into that data.
Yeah.
So they came up with this list of things that are most hated in the 50 states.
Okay.
And for instance, let's see, just to give out an idea, well, in North Carolina, they hate them some DUI checkpoints. But the most hated thing in South Carolina is Edward Snowden. In Georgia, the most hated thing is tuna salad. Which, I suspect there will be imminent war between Georgia and Alabama any minute now, because the most hated thing in Alabama is vegetarianism. Georgia hates tuna salad. Alabama hates vegetarianism. Meanwhile, Mississippi hates anal sex, but they're lying.
Have they ever tried it?
Yes, and that, I mean, they're saying they hate it. They're just, they're covering, okay? They're trying to pass.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Washington State, they hate Keurig K-Cups. How typical that you know, Washington State would have a thing about coffee.
Yeah. Now, wait a minute. Those are those little tiny...
plastic, like, single-serve cups, and you put it in, you put the lid... We've got the machine. We've got the reusable... Yeah. We've got the refillable cup thing.
And they hate Keurig... They're K-Cups,
yeah,
is what they're called.
Yeah, and they hate them because they're stupidly expensive.
Yeah.
And they... And you know, if you're any kind of a liberal, you know that they... Or you know, environmentalist or into ecology... You know that those little plastic cups are not going to, well, they're going to be like little pudding cups for the race of sentient cockroaches a million years from now because they don't biodegrade.
Yeah.
But California, where you are, the most hated thing in California, and you know this makes me feel like an honorary Californian, is fidget spinners. You know what?
Why on earth would we? I look askance at my fellow Californians. Of all the things in the known universe and even the unknown universe that there are to hate, I mean, to absolutely detest with every fiber of your being, from the very root of your soul, how in the world did they narrow it down and ultimately pick? What are they called? Fidget bits?
Fidget spinners.
Fidget spinners.
Because they're just annoying as shit. That's why. I hate fidget spinners, too. I'm apparently not supposed to be in West Virginia. I'm supposed to be in you know, California. Because West Virginia hates Lyft. You know, the ride service. We don't even have Lyft here, for Christ's sakes. And we already hate it.
My fellow Californians hate these little spinner fidget deals. How were they years ago with propeller beanies? You remember those? They were like yarmulkes.
Yeah, but
with a propeller on.
Yeah, I'm a little younger than you. For my generation, it was clackers.
Oh, I remember clackers. Yeah. Now I didn't like those. I must say,
I spent a good 9 months with my wrist just black and blue from, because you'd really get it going just, and sooner or later you'd start getting tired, and there was no way to stop clacking without beating the holy hell out of your hand and your wrist. Yow! Yeah.
At least with a paddle ball, those are rubber balls, okay?
Yeah, the great paddle ball moment being in Blazing Saddles, where Hedley Lamarr says they're going to give them to the natives in exchange for land, and Governor LePetitmaine tries to use one of the paddle balls. Damn things are defective, and in a great moment of high comedy, Hedley Harvey Korman just picks it up, whack it, watch your ass. But you know how you were talking about the tornado coming across from Indiana.
Oh, I never finished that deal.
No, you didn't, but I thought I would let you know.
Nothing
good ever comes from Indiana, except Kurt Vonnegut. But yeah. The state of Indiana hates bloggers. Probably because bloggers...
I'm going to have to sit my fellow Americans down state by state and get into their heads, or at least have a strict talking to.
Oh, this is a fascinating list. Over there in the old Dominion of Virginia, from whence the native soil from whence you come.
Yeah, yeah.
The most hated thing is in Virginia is people who dab pizza grease with a napkin. I mean, talk about drilling down into the fucking obscure.
Yeah.
In D.C.
I don't know what to say about my fellow Virginians. The mother of presidents has been reduced to being pissed off and hateful when it comes to people dabbing pizza grease with a napkin.
Right, because obviously you're supposed to just wipe your mouth with the with your sleeve up there by your shoulder. Because you got to remember, there's a lot, there's a whole bunch of heathens in the Old Dominion too. But this is a hell of a list. This is one of the better lists I've seen.
Now, where'd you get this list? Because I need to consult.
It's over at BuzzFeed. Maryland. Maryland has an issue with you too, Scott.
Oh no.
Maryland hates cheap coffee. Delaware, on the other hand, hates Casey Affleck. DC despises the idea that everyone has a soulmate.
Well, I can get on board with that. I think that's the biggest. I used to believe in that shit, but now I just don't know.
In Arkansas, and Haley's going to love this one if she's listening. In Arkansas, they just hate cleaning. Just cleaning. The entire state of Nebraska, however, hates Seinfeld.
Well, those people are crazy.
The entire state of North Dakota hates the New York Times. The state of South Dakota, on the other hand, hates friendly reminder emails. Things like, did you remember to send in your subscription to the New York Times?
Now, on this list, are there any states whose best or worst hatred is reserved for another state?
No, not really, unless Mississippi hating anal sex and Alabama hating vegetarianism somehow count. Out west, the most hated thing in Nevada is feminism. Slightly to the east, however, the most hated thing in Utah is porn.
Do you know what is consumed in Utah more than any other state?
Porn. They're covering.
No. I mean an actual meal, an actual edible substance.
I told you you're in the hands of the goddess, damn it. You're not paying attention.
Lime Jell-O.
Ooh, Lime Jell-O porn. That just sounds.
I wonder.
That may be the most vulgar thing that's ever been uttered on the horn.
Well, and they probably have made quite a run on in the stores, if they have such stores out in Utah, on lime jello flavored edible panties.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? But see, no, we know for a fact that either the data set here is flawed or that Utah is full of liars. Because we already know, thanks to another data dive by the folks at X Hamster or Dirty Gerbils or, you know, whatever the name of that porn site is, we know that there are more consumers of porn, more consumption of porn per capita in Utah than any other state in the union. So, you know, they get on Hater looking for somebody to hook up with, and what do you hate? I hate porn. Do you hate porn? I hate porn. Ooh, boy. And you know why they hate porn? Because they can do it so much better live. On the other hand, though, there's something to be said for the data set, because the most hated thing in Arizona, would you care to guess?
Arizona. Let me think here.
And based on the previous story, no, it's not Muslim political candidates for Senate.
No, go ahead and tell me, because
sand. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. New Mexico hates polo shirts.
What about Oklahoma? I lived there for a while.
Oklahoma's a bunch of liars too. Hearing the latest gossip.
Oh, that's bullshit. Some of the best gossip I ever heard was in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and it's probably all about those people from Arkansas who won't clean.
And I'll tell you the truth, it was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I lived, and it was not too far from the Oral Roberts University campus. You put that in your pipe.
Now, on the other hand, I have to give props to the state of Michigan. I've never spent a lot of time in Michigan. But according to this data set, they hate the thing Michiganders hate more than anything else is Pride and Prejudice.
The book?
And any permutation thereof, I'm assuming. It's not like it's got an asterisk here, Scott.
And really, I'm sitting in my Cat in the Hat BVD shorts, thinking that logic applies when you're compiling a things you hate list state by state. Logic goes out the fucking window.
And by the way, while we're Laborman says, Bob, I bet Texas hates Starbucks. No, Laborman. New Mexico hates polo shirts, but Texas hates sleeping with the window open. You know, because that's how your chupacabras get in and stuff like that. And Ted and Ted Cruz and things like that. Yeah.
UFO abduction.
But I'm going to need some help here. You're a cultured man about town, Scott. What the hell is trap music?
Trap music?
Trap. T-R-A-P. Trap.
God, the only thing roughly associated is, isn't there a form of drum that's called a trap?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're going to make me look this up, aren't you? Maybe pop culture correspondent Michael and Madison will know.
I've never encountered the term.
Well, my God, I typed in T-R-A-P space and the letter M, and the first thing popped was music. Oh, okay. Trap music is a music genre that originated in the early 1990s in the southern United States, typified by its aggressive lyrical content and sound, where the instrumentals are propelled by 808 kick drums or heavy extended sub bass lines, double time, triple time, and other faster time division hi-hats, layered synthesizers, and cinematic strings. Well, that's
interesting
great.
Titles. Do you see those titles at the top of the page?
No.
Blue cheese, OG Kush diet. That's an interesting diet to be on.
Young Jeezy's song, you know what it is. Okay, so in Wisconsin, the single most hated thing is trap music. But you know what? There's something, arguably probably the most level-headed people in this country are Minnesotans. You know, they just unflappable, Minnesota nice. You know what Minnesotans hate most? And it's enough to make you think, I need to go there. Drinking alone.
I was going to guess Ham's beer, because I think that...
These are some social, convivial people. They hate drinking alone.
Yeah.
So maybe some Wisconsinites fed up with trap music need to go to Minnesota and have a beer. And maybe take some New Glarus with them, because it's like, you know, illegal. But no,
it's a phenomenal thing, that internet.
Oh, I've been having fun with this list since I've. If you're into gluten free, do not go to Wyoming. They hate you.
Well, I can't think of any reason to go to Wyoming to start with, gluten-free or otherwise. I saw a thing on Facebook where you mark each of the states where you've lived, that you visited, and there's a pattern. I've never been to the upper tier of states, with the exception of Michigan, and I've never been further south than Virginia, unless you count Texas, but I consider Texas the Southwest. But a lot of those rectangular states up in the upper tier of the Midwest and all, there's nothing about them that would cause me to go other than the natural beauty. But when you weigh that against some of the mindsets, you know, you get up there into Idaho, for Christ's sake, There's some crazy-ass people. By the way, let me give kudos and a tip of the old rabbit ears to Angry Indian. I enjoyed the hell out of his call with you yesterday, because when you got to the part about Alan Berg, the Denver talk host that was assassinated by the white power group, the Order, I think it was called.
And out of which Eric Bogosian made a small fortune with his program, with his, the one-man show and movie talk radio.
Yeah, it was quite a good show, as I recall, the movie anyway. But it was a stellar call yesterday from Angry, and I just enjoyed the hell out of it, because I recall reading a book about Alan Berg about 6 or 8 years after he was killed that gave a history of that group. Bob, what did he say his name was? Bob, whoever it was, the guy. They were fucking robbing, doing strong-arm robberies of armored cars on the way to or from a bank to finance their terrorism, domestic terrorism. And ultimately, I think the FBI got them. But there for a while, it was as if the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms barely took notice of what they were doing. And if they had been the Panthers, or if they had been, you know, some other leftish radical group, why, they would have infiltrated and put the kibosh on them in very short order. Oh, no.
No argument from me.
I just glanced up, not to be a bummer, on MSNBC.
Yeah, I've just seen the breaking news, too. John McCain has been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Well, I couldn't be more sorry to hear that. I never agreed with him politically, but having done that dance before, I don't wish that on anybody. Even Ted Cruz,
you dealt with one of those?
Oh, yes. It was a pituitary tumor about the size of a walnut, and thankfully it was benign. But the removal of it is what led to becoming disabled, because it was in a very intricate place in the body's mechanism, the pituitary and the hypothalamus. But I am so sorry to hear that. I mean, I never agreed with much he ever said politically, but I would not wish... Well, that's what killed old Ted Kennedy. I mean, and that it's never a positive thing for illness of that kind to befall anyone, and I wish him nothing but the best.
You demonstrate your essential humanity, Scott. You do.
Well, you know, what can you do? What can you do, Bob? Because before, it was such a life-changing experience for me, and we're talking about in 1989. I was bopping along, minding my own business, more or less happily married, selling cars during the week and doing radio on the weekend, fat and happy, not a care in the world, when bam, I'm hit with double vision. And not to go into the whole story, but I got my glasses changed because I figured it was that. Then I saw double more clearly. And they went through every conceivable test where they put the things on your head and get the, like, an electrocardiogram of your head, your brain, you know. And they did a CAT scan, and ultimately it took an MRI before they figured out what the hell was going on. And there's something about, I don't know, when you could have died and didn't, nothing's ever the same. And, you know, as much of a downside as there was in the aftermath of that physically, I took something valuable and positive from it, in that it gave me a greater appreciation of the tentative nature of life. And also, you know, that there are people on the planet who have it far worse than I do.
Well, you know, it's the symptoms that you just mentioned, the double vision and everything.
Yeah.
Reminds me of one of the most remarkable books I ever read. Some years back, Jimmy Breslin, as fine a writer as this country has produced in ages, started experiencing double vision and went to the doctor. And they did a battery of tests, and they found out he had an aneurysm. And the surgery was risky, and he went, and the reason I was thinking about it was he went to apparently the best guy in the country for doing this kind of thing was is a surgeon who was in, I think, Arizona, and had it done, and he survived it. And after the surgery, they looked, when they're checking to make sure all of you came back, they said, Mr. Breslin, do you know where you are? And he looked up and said, Kansas. And his wife looked down and said, he's fine.
Yeah, and that sounds like something that he would say.
But I don't know if that surgeon's still doing the work, but, you know, maybe it's a good thing that John went home to Arizona. And it sure makes, not to make political hay out of this, but it kind of makes Chinless Mitch look like a real dick. Because, see, there's John McCain fighting a brain tumor, and fortunately for John McCain, and I'm not being an asshole here, Scott. I'm not.
No, I know.
Your display of common humanity was lovely, and I'm not going to trample on it. But so you got John McCain with a brain tumor, who has available to him the best health care that the people of the United States seeking to form that more perfect union and provide for the common, common welfare, all of that. He's got the best health care we can give him. And so next week, knowing that John McCain is battling a brain tumor and is up against it, even with the best health care money can provide and the people can provide, Mitch McConnell is going to host a debate about how best to take away health care from 33 million fucking Americans.
Yeah. Well, that's the nature of the beast.
What a dick.
And I would tend to think, had this fate not befallen John McCain, after a week or so of recuperation from removal of the blood clot, which was what laid him up to start with, he would have come back and probably put in some good words and some courageous action on the part of people who would be direly affected by the removal of some of the health care protections that McConnell was trying to take away. Because when he was laid up, I said, well, that works for our favor. Sorry for John McCain, because at the time all it was a blood clot. And I said, kind of good, because things were going south in a hurry for the Republican Senate anyway on this deal. So to have him laid up, it didn't help them move forward in any way, shape, or form. But no, it doesn't. Nothing that Mitch does, Bert the Turtle is what I call him, nothing that he does or doesn't do none of it surprises me, simply because he's someone, and this is my deal with Rush Limbaugh. You have somebody who was addicted to opiates. You have somebody who lost virtually all of his hearing, and there was some other thing that he had, a health issue. And you would think, given all things being equal, that most people, a couple of swift kicks to the ass in rapid succession like that would cause them to modify or at least rethink some of the positions that they take in life. But no.
A few million dollars really can serve as a powerful insulator against common humanity.
Well, it does. And not to toot my own horn, but I will, if that's what it sounds like, I'll go ahead and take credit for it. About 6 or 8 years ago, now I'm not talking about Ann Coulter, it's the woman who kind of looks like her, who is a right-wing radio talk host.
Laura Ingraham.
Laura Ingraham had a bout, I think, with either ovarian cancer or breast cancer. And when I heard about it, I posted, this was even before Facebook, I said, her political circumstances notwithstanding, I wish her nothing but the best, with the hope, the secret hope, and maybe even selfish secret hope, that a life-changing event like that might modify her understanding and her appreciation and context in the world. But did it? Again, as with Limbaugh, no, not in any discernible way. Maybe she's nicer in her personal interactions, but in terms of professionally, she's still the nasty C word. And I hate to say that, but that's how she strikes me in terms of her attitude. And I can say that with some confidence because I know that I'm an asshole, okay? I have perfectly formed asshole tendencies as a human being. It's just that I dance with them in such a way that they don't always become apparent. As a matter of fact, I must be getting better at it because I am as much of an asshole as I've always been, but it doesn't show up nearly to the extent that it used to. You know? And again, if that sounds like I'm tooting my own horn,
well,
then
I'll be straight up with you, Scott. You're getting some pushback from Isaac via Twitter.
Good. I like pushback.
He says, what drug is Scott on right now? Fuck John McCain. He don't and never has cared for us and others. But, you know, the thing that I understand that sentiment, too.
Yeah, I do, too. If that works for somebody, go ahead and knock yourself out.
Well, but whether it works or not is not the metric for me. The question is, if we take that to be true, and I think we largely can, if we take Isaac's statement to be true, and I think we largely can, that still does not... it's Wednesday, you know? I mean, we do these kind of things on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It does not ennoble us to be as without compassion as was he. That's eye for an eye, tooth for a toothism. And I forget who. Was it Einstein that said an eye for an eye and the world goes blind?
Yeah. And if we're going to talk about thoughts of religious leaders in terms of how to approach living, life and aliveness, the golden rule, if I'm not mistaken, there's a version of it for every known religious thought process on the planet. There's a version of do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yeah, there is. And in fact, there is an argument to be made within the Christian tradition that whoever it was that taught Yeshua had been taught by the great Rabbi Hillel. Because do unto others as you would have them do unto you is straight out of Hillel, who said don't do things to others that you would hate to have done to you, because somebody and I'm sure I'm getting it wrong and I'll get an email about how wrong I got it, but the story goes something like one of his followers said to Hillel, what is the greatest commandment? And he said, don't do things to other people that you would hate to have done to you. All the rest is commentary.
Exactly.
And so he's about two centuries or so before Yeshua. And it looks like there may be, genealogies of who's taught by whom.
Yeah.
In religious traditions. Well, it looks like, you know, Hillel reached as far as Yeshua and quite possibly further. Steve from Georgia Stan says, Bob, we're liberals. We're supposed to be better than that. And I understand that sentiment. So, everyone is the author of his own hell, okay?
Mm-hmm.
No one has hell thrust upon them. And I'm not talking about the burning hell. I'm talking about, you know, the existential miseries of life.
Well, yeah, it's a handcrafted deal that we're all responsible for in our as individuals. Yeah, I buy that.
You know, I battle triglycerides and cholesterol. Well, I've got a genetic predisposition for it, but if I'd eaten nothing but fucking salad from the moment that I could chew food as an infant, I probably wouldn't have this problem. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And gotten lots of exercise. So we're the author of our own hells. Now, I reserve in full hypocritical fashion, Scott, I abso-goddamn-lutely reserve the right to not engage in such kumbaya-ism with a very short list of people. Okay? I reserve the right to go out and run dancing naked down the street on the day that I find out that Dick fucking Cheney is fucking dead.
Well, I'll be there with you. We can get a group raid at the jail.
I mean, and the same thing goes for the president. And there's no threat here. Just stand down from sweat condition alpha, Agent Fred. Don't talk to your goddamn wrist there, Agent Fred. I reserve the same emotion for should I find out that, you know, the entire Trump family had been wiped out by a goddamn meteor. Okay, I'm going to be a total son of a bitch, and I'm going to go and laugh and cackle. The program will be unlistenable because it'll just be going ha 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 ha.
And I'll probably be right there with you. I mean, yeah, there are certain people, okay, that you
Mitch
do have
McConnell.
To well, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it, you know, because so seldom do we get that really sweet, cool draft of justice of seeing someone who is absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt the manifestation of evil incarnate. And anybody who wants to take health care away from 33 million American people and kill a significant other of them falls into that category. I mean, you know, I'd want video footage of the little alien popping out of his belly and then eating his fucking face, okay? I want that.
And it's that they do that. But they do it with an attitude of, now, I'm doing you good. I'm doing you a favor.
Right.
I'm doing the right and moral thing.
And that's why, when you were manifesting your common decency a little early on, I was about to push back on you when you said, you know, I wouldn't wish that on Ted Cruz, because I was about a millisecond away from going, oh, I fucking would. Because, you know, that's another one of those just plain, vile, evil, awful, terrible, no good, rotten, disgusting, hypocritical pukes that...
And smarmy. You forgot smarmy.
Smarmy, waxen, booger-eaten.
So, makes your skin crawl, doesn't he?
Yes.
I mean, just to hear him, he's
yeah. Well, you're not as smart as me, and I don't have any friends, but I don't need them.
But it's a vocal quality.
I don't feel particularly terrible about what I'm saying, Scott, because it was none other than Lindsey Graham who said, If you tried Ted Cruz for murder in the Senate, there would not be a single vote to acquit.
Yeah, well, see, that should tell you volumes, you know?
And, I mean, I don't feel, you know, this is a special list, Scott.
Well, the thing about McCain, Bob, is...
Blankenship, okay? There's another one.
And Bob Murray, get a group rate.
Goddamn right, wait a minute. For the group rate, I find it beneficial for my purposes doing this program to try to keep a handle on other periods of time.
Yeah,
And you do that rather well.
And I think I just got an amen from Punky.
Yeah, Punky's.
With that being the case, you know, I've been, and I recommend this book to anybody who just needs a little perspective. It's brilliantly written. It's going to keep you busy for a while. It's wonderful. Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror. It's about the 14th century. And you know, if you're sitting there, whether you're rich or poor, in the 14th century, sitting there and watching a third of the population goddamn die, you know, in months, that had to blow your mind. And you didn't have science, and you didn't have biology, and you didn't have evolutionary principles to explain, you know, why this thing, and so you were just left wondering why God hated you.
You didn't have a breaking news crawl going across the bottom of the screen.
No. So those people had it pretty rough. And there is a bad guy back in the 14th century. Holy cow. I mean, I only bring this up because we're talking about, you know, what a lousy way that, you know, the people who, you know, ooh, God, they're just terrible human beings. There was this asshole. His name was Charles of Navarre. He had various royal claims to certain thrones. And his purpose in life was apparently to fuck with the French crown, which was really kind of unfair because that was like kitten kicking. The level of incompetence was just amazing. And so he spent his lifetime in shifting allegiances that just kept part of the continent in chaos. Navarre's in Spain. I think I may have even told people about him already. So he gets up into his 50s, and he's just been a goddamn villain all his life. Okay? He's like Trump that way. And so he's not well, and he's sort of lived the high life, you know. There weren't a lot of people out there saying, you know, watch your triglycerides or that diabetes. It'll cost you. And so he was feeling poorly, and what passed for medical science said that he needed to be, his pores needed to breathe. He needed to get the poisons out of him. So, you know, a little bloodletting. And then they swaddled him head to toe in, like, gauze bandages that had been soaked in brandy.
Oh, God.
They said the room had to be really, really warm to get him to, you know, get all the poisons out. And somewhere along the way, somebody oopsied a candle onto him.
Oh, no. The human torch.
Oh, and he was.
Oh, God.
And the moralists of the day had a heyday with his story because...
Oh, God.
Everybody all over the continent was going, oh, man, that is a shitty way to go. But, man, if anybody ever had it coming... I mean, goddamn, they were calling him Charles the Bad, okay? Let me see. Because his death comes down through history as one of those, holy shit, you know, I mean, if they were really gods, they hated his goddamn guts. Francis Blagden, writing in 1801 of something that happened in the 14th century, Charles the Bad, having fallen into such a state of decay that he could not make use of his limbs, consulted his physician, who ordered him to be wrapped up from head to foot in a linen cloth impregnated with brandy so that he might be enclosed in it to the very neck as a sack. It was night when this remedy was administered. One of the female attendants of the palace, charged to sew up the cloth that contained the patient, having come to the neck, the fixed point where she was to finish her seam, made a knot, according to custom, but as there was still remaining an end of thread, instead of cutting it as usual with scissors, she had recourse to the candle, which immediately set fire to the whole cloth. Being terrified, she ran away and abandoned the king, who was thus burnt alive in his own palace.
The human flaming fruitcake.
The monk historian Froissart said, by the pleasure of God or of the devil, the fire caught to his sheets, and from that to his person, swathed as it was in matter highly inflammable, he was fearfully burnt, but lingered, because Froissart wants to work, twist the knife a little bit, but he was fearfully burnt, but lingered nearly a fortnight in the most terrible agonies.
I just brought it up on Wikipedia, a distant mirror. I love the subtitle, The Calamitous 14th Century.
Yeah, no, there were shit, a lot Barbara. There were a lot of people in that century who were pretty damned well sure that humanity was not going to make it out of that century.
And rightfully so. I mean, given what little they knew, to have, what did you say, a third of the population die around you? In a matter of weeks,
right? And even with that going on, okay, yeah. And in its aftermath, they still can't reach anything resembling harmony. They can't look up and go, okay, well, maybe we survived. Okay, maybe we need to rethink how we're doing. No, they just went on about their business like they had before it happened, slaughtering each other and killing. I mean, if you read this book, you'll read about the revolt of the Jacquerie. And how the barons and the dukes and the earls and all that just slaughtered them out of hand because they had it coming because they were poor. And I mean I just find it a very instructive book in terms of perspective for what for what we're living through now, because we really do. I mean, I don't know about you, Scott, but I do. I wake up every morning and I go, still here.
Well, really, only the technique has changed in the intervening centuries, Bob. You had the dukes and the noblemen, wailing on those poor, unfortunate bastards that they wailed upon, and they did it with physical violence, the shedding of blood. Today, it's all done in a very gentlemanly way, with all the rules and decorum that you could possibly want, legislatively.
Well, it depends on where you are, how gentlemanly it's done. Our partners in peace, the Saudis?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just loaded up a few aircraft that we sold them with a bunch of bombs that we sold them and zipped on over to Yemen and slaughtered 20 civilians.
But I was referring to the healthcare deal, where if they could get away with it, they would do every jot and tittle perfectly proportioned and taken care of, but the net effect would be millions would die, or at least many hundreds of thousands would die because of the health care that they once had would be gone.
Yeah.
They've cleaned up the technique, in other words, but the end result is still sadly the same.
It is, and I think we probably need to acknowledge, and I haven't, and so I'm gonna hear, we probably need to acknowledge that when somebody says, oh, goddamn, the ice melted in my margarita, somebody will tweet back and say, too bad for you, hashtag first world problems. Well, even the healthcare debate is a first/second world problem. If you happen to be in Syria or Yemen or Iraq or Afghanistan, or any number of other places, parts of Ukraine. What happened, that's a god, healthcare? That's a fucking parlor game.
Yeah.
Now, it's life and death here. And as an uninsured American, I can tell you how terrifying it is. But it's a far cry from... But that's the thing. Maybe we're getting a little taste of it. See, I mean, I grew up in the Cold War. You grew up in the Cold War. You didn't wake up a lot of days going, oh, shit, still here. I know I didn't.
Well, now, wait a minute. I remember vividly in second grade.
The Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, no, not that so much, although I do remember that. But I remember going to Catholic elementary school. Sister Tarsicius, she was the one that cut the fart. I don't know if I've told that story.
Yes, we know about Sister Tarsicius.
After lunch, every day, in Sister Tarsicius's, can't beat that polygraph, in Sister Tarsicius's classroom, after lunch, we were in recess, we would all stand and say a prayer to, well, some days it would be to deliver this cardinal, whose name I've forgotten, in, I think, Romania or Hungary or Yugoslavia, who is being held by the evil communists, to have him delivered back to freedom. But on other days, it would be that we would not blow each other up in a huge incandescent glow, you know, via nuclear weaponry. And being right on the outskirts of Washington, you know that I was a crispy critter should such come to pass, okay? My little 7 or 8 year old corpse, they wouldn't even have dental records to figure out who the hell I had been, okay? And I remember at least 3 or 4 days out of the week, we would stand after lunch and say whatever this cockamamie prayer was to whichever saint it was, to either take care of this cardinal being held by the evil commies, or that we would not destroy the world and everything on it with nuclear weapons. And you talk about a chilling way to grow up. And it was standard. There was no question about it that each day could, in fact, be the last if it weren't for a merciful God and the intercessory prayers of Mother Mary. It's a wonder I turned out as relatively normal as I did, having grown up in that atmosphere.
Well, and the larger point that I was getting at, though, Scott, is
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, that was what you experienced with, and you know, if there really was a God, there would be audio out there somewhere of Mel Blanc saying, "Sister Tarsicius" in the voice of Sylvester the Cat and or Daffy Duck. Sister Tarsicius.
Yes.
But that, you know, that was sort of an enforced existential dread that Sister Tarsicius kind of foisted upon you. And I'm not taking anything away from you, but mostly, you know, Cold War, nukes pointed at each other, so what? But now I really do, because of where we are and who's in the White House. And the chaos that reigns supreme, I wake up every morning, and maybe it's also a combination of the fact that I've had some lifestyle changes, so I'm waking up at stupidly strange hours of the morning. I mean, I'm usually in bed. But now it's like my mind wakes me up at 6 o'clock in the morning, so I can turn on DirecTV Now and find out if we're still here.
Yeah.
And it's been that way since the inauguration. And maybe that means I'm not okay. And I won't fight over me not being okay, but I'm hanging on to my sanity as hard as anybody else is.
Well, it is a struggle. I'll tell you, it is a struggle because you wake up and you fire up the old TV. And as it's warming up and the picture is coming on, everybody, I'm sure, instinctively on some level is wondering, well, who is it, the writer? What fresh new hell is this? Dorothy Parker. What fresh hell is this? There is a little of that each and every freaking morning, because anything is possible. Anything is possible, boys and girls. It's just we have not seen the like of this, okay? We're in literally uncharted territories. And, yeah, it's true. It's like with stock performance. Past performance is not indicative of future
behavior of the stock.
Future results,
okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, every day is a fucking crapshoot, but it has taken on a clarity and intensity with this guy. The demented circus peanut is what I call him. You know, it's like anything can happen. It becomes realer than real, almost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got a note here from Keith. Subject line, doing to others. Bob, you mentioned doing to others a few minutes ago. Mitch McTurtle, if he were to get sick, needs to lose his health care. And then he could feel like what it's like not to have that gold plan. And, you know, it wouldn't bother me a bit. Would not bother me, not one damned iota.
Well, some people, let's face it, Bob, are hard cases when it comes to learning empathy. They truly, truly are. I gave the example of Rush Limbaugh, okay? And what's her name? Laura Ingraham. And God knows Trump. Jesus H. Christ on the cross, munching a cracker. If anybody shows up for me as never having even been given on distribution day the empathy gene, the capacity for it, I am not quick to discount any human being, okay? But I'm telling you, that guy, if there were such an animal, he would be first in line as an example.
Well, I don't know if you're any kind of a deadhead, but I remember... I remember when Jerry Garcia died. And it was a damn shame. Jerry had had his struggles, but he was brilliant. And I just happened to be listening to Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And this is before his own revelations come out about his, you know, little problem. And he said, "My friends, I don't understand what all the fuss is about. Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead is dead. As far as I can tell, he's just another dead junkie, ladies and gentlemen." And in a few years' time, the goddess of irony took his measurements and gave him a monkey that perfectly fit his back.
Yeah.
But does that create any compassion in him? No, because you know it was just a couple of years after that he's mocking Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people in the world who really are plain old-fashioned, garden-variety, goddamn evil. Mitch McConnell's one. Limbaugh's one. Trump is one. Cruz? I mean, Jesus Christ, Cruz was the nearest thing to a challenge for Trump. And just imagine for a moment, I mean, maybe we'd be better off. I don't know. Imagine for a moment if that religious maniac had gotten his hands on the reins of power. Holy cow. But we got to get out of here, Scott. It's been a delightful conversation. We've been all over the place.
Believe it or not, Bob, I did not mention what I originally called for. I will send you an email because there were two items.
It's not like this is the last program.
No, I know. And this is like the ultimate fortune cookie calling you. Because you never know what you're going to get.
Well,
and it's a delight each and every freaking time.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate it, my friend. And I'm sorry for blagging on your coffee, man.
No, that's perfectly fine. It leaves more for me.
All right, you take care.
Okay, man.
Later. Goodbye to Punky. Bye now.
Bye, Punky.
And so we come to the end of the program. Kind of a goose egg tonight. No, not kind of a goose egg. A real goose egg. So that means, depending on what the overnight crew does, we will be looking tomorrow at 275. 570. Holy shit. 575. 645 for a fundraising goal tomorrow. Yay. And I had a note, I was asking about trap music. I got a frustrated note from Michael in Madison who said, "You have kids. How do you not know what trap music is?" Well, I may have heard it. I just didn't know that's what it was. I was just looking for a little clarification here. My apologies about last night's podcast. There's some sort of error in it. I tried re-uploading it. I don't know, but if you want it, I do know it's up at Podbean, podbean.com, search Bob Kincaid, and it'll be right there. So thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep this program going financially. It wouldn't be here without you, a substantially smaller subset of the larger group of people who listen. Thanks this evening, midweek, to our midweek prayer meet and utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Part of the fundraising we're doing now on a monthly basis is to cover the costs for White Rose Society. So, you know, that's in there too. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.